Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Yes, we are back. My co-host Stan Friedman and I have been kind of on the road, busy, and then, of course, we had the holiday last week. So the last 2 weeks, I was really pleased to see so many people download and listen to some of the archived segments of Franchise Today. And, of course, as I mentioned, my co-host Stan Friedman is on the line with me today.
Hey, Paul, it feels like it has been forever.
I know it. I know it. It's amazing with so many different things going on in franchising, events going on simultaneously. We actually were going in two different directions.
I mean, it's rare that we wind up traveling in the same week but to different places, right? So usually when we have franchising events, we're kind of targeted and pointed in the same direction. But how did it go for you down in Orlando? You were down there for the Franchise Broker Association convention, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a fantastic event. There was several hundred people in attendance, both franchise brokers as well as franchisors. It was great seeing a lot of people there: Lonnie Helgeson, Paul Wahlberg, Pete Baldeen, of course, Nancy Friedman, no relation to you, Stan, who's been a guest on our show, was our keynote speaker. What a hoot she is. Can't get a word in edgewise with her, but she's definitely a sharp cookie, definitely entertaining. It was a unbelievable week, as you can imagine, my first one addressing the group as the new president of the Franchise Brokers Association. So I'm actually still dealing with a little bit of a raspy voice coming out of that because I think I spoke for 5 or 6 days straight. And, of course, I didn't get a chance to go to the Emerging Franchise Brands Conference that you were in. And also I always love going down to Vegas to the Restaurant and Development Conference. And, of course, I hadn't even had a chance to get debriefed with anybody that was there. So you could kind of give us a little bit of insight into the Emerging Brands Conference. I got some feedback that it was a very good conference.
It was great. I mean, I really enjoyed it this year, enjoyed the fact that we were at a new venue in New Orleans, and it was a very well-attended and very substantial conference. There were great many franchisors there that were just coming out of the gate with some, in fact, not even yet out of the gate. So some really, really early stage franchisors. There were a fairly significant number of 50 or less and a surprising number of 50 plus who still consider themselves emerging brands. And I find that to be a real enigma. There's a very loosely defined, I think it's very subjective, Paul, how you term emerging and what it means to different people. But nonetheless, for those who came and aren't even out of the gates yet, to those who are on the way to 100, I think there was significant amounts of intellectual capital shared, a great deal of networking and opportunities to catch back with people later in the day that you may have heard speaking from the front of the room earlier in the day. And for my part, I felt really, really gratified to be able to contribute and participate as a sponsor to host a session with my friends from Ben's Soft Pretzels and Christian Brothers Automotive, Josh Wall and Scott Jones, and contribute as we could to the content of the program as well as to the networking and the good times we had. And we'll hear more about it, I guess, from our guest a little bit later because Michael was there as well, and we can get his take on what the conference looked like from the franchisor's point of view. Great conference, though. Some of my favorite market segment, if you will, is always the emerging franchisor. So I'm happy to say it was time well spent.
Well, you know, Stan, the one thing that's not subjective, like the term emerging, is the fact that I heard recently, and I think we've already heard it several times, the first, I believe, was when we had Aziz Hashim on the show a couple of months ago, 4,300 franchisors and 52% of them have 20 units or less. Of course, not all of them are emerging. Some of them just might be you know, dead in the water. Some of them just might be stagnant and churning along, but I would have to say a significant number are emerging, especially if I recall what Aziz said correctly, was that there was approximately one new franchise per day over the last 2 years entering the franchise space, which would give us some 730. Plus, he said, they anticipate another 500 or 600 over the next couple of years. That's a lot of new blood into the franchise community.
It is, Paul, but, you know, that's not always good news, as we both
know. I know that.
Staying power is what it's all about, and sustenance, sustainable growth. And, you know, I look at Entrepreneur every year when they do the Franchise 500, and I marvel at that, how many franchisors are so proud to be in the fastest-growing category. And I don't know that that's always the best place to be. Speed for the sake of speed, I don't know. Growth for the sake of growth, that too, not so much. I feel like more franchisors in the emerging category need programs like Springboard and programs like this IFA Emerging Franchisor Conference to help learn the ropes. And sometimes less is more, and steady, sustainable growth is a better way to go sometimes than just racing through a finish line like you're in a sprint instead of a marathon. Those numbers sometimes
and
scare
also,
me.
Yeah, and also with those programs like Springboard and Emerging Brands, Franchise Today Show, as we talk like we are today with Michael Barnett from Romp and Roll, another emerging brand, we seem to have attracted a lot of the emerging brands, which I keep getting, you know, notes back from the various PR people and other people are saying, wow, I love this information. It's helping me, you know, launch my brand or learn how, you know, to become more aligned with becoming a sustainable brand and putting in systems. So, again, 8 years, January will be celebrating our 8th year on the air, over 300 podcasts in our time, hundreds of thousands of on-demand listens in the history of Franchise Today. And I love it, Stan, that this is our way of giving back to the franchise community, and not just giving back, but setting a foundation from which new franchisors can tap into this wealth of information that's just priceless.
Well, and I hope that those listening agree that it is priceless and that there is a really strong body of work that's amassed over this time. And, you know, getting some information that may be not necessarily brand new information every week, but brand new from different perspectives sometimes is what causes that aha moment where somebody may have heard something 18 times before but actually listens to it for the first time from some meaningful person who contributed in the conversation, who set off a light bulb for them and helps them get to the next stage of their growth.
Absolutely. So what else do you have on front of the house? Because I am absolutely dying to talk to Michael.
Well, we won't keep Michael waiting but a minute longer, but this is newsworthy, and for those who haven't yet heard it, I'd have a hard time believing that there's anyone who hasn't heard it yet, but the Franchise Action Network reports that just 10 days before the anticipated implementation, a federal judge in Texas halted the U.S. Department of Labor's new federal overtime rule, which would have doubled the Fair Labor Standards Act's salary threshold for exemption from overtime pay. The rule was set to take effect tomorrow, Paul, doubling to $47,476, the salary threshold, under which virtually all workers receive time and a half pay whenever they work more than 40 hours in a given week. 21 states filed emergency motions for preliminary injunction in October to halt the rule, claiming that the Department of Labor exceeded its authority by raising the salary threshold aggressively and beyond reason. These states consolidated their case last month with another lawsuit that was filed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce along with the IFA, amongst other business groups that piled on as well. A preliminary injunction preserves the status quo while the court determines the department's authority to make the final rule, as well as the final rule's validity, according to Judge Amos Mazant of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Texas. He did that in a pre-Thanksgiving ruling, which put the brakes on this completely for now. So what this means is the overtime rule will not take effect as was planned to begin tomorrow. However, it could still be implemented down the road. It's going to hang in the courts for who knows how long. But the good news is that for now, franchise owners, franchisees, may continue to follow the existing overtime regulations until the decision's reached through the courts at a later date. This is great news, and with the incoming Trump administration, we have every hope that there will be further standing down of some of the rulemaking that has put so many onerous regulations upon us. Hopefully all of this will find its final form, and, you know, the IFA president and CEO Robert Cresante lauded the surprise injunction, as has all of us in the franchise world. This came as a very unexpected surprise right in front of Thanksgiving, and what a great way to take us into the holiday season and in hopes for some other relief as we get into the new year.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay myself all that extra overtime for the extra 35 or 45 hours a week. I put in over 40 hours, as I'm sure every entrepreneur out there has done it. So, yeah, it's interesting. Anything else on the front of the house?
No, I think we're going to let that stand alone, because there's no news that could be as important as that news and as happy coming off the holiday for Thanksgiving and going into the official countdown to the Christmas, Hanukkah season, New Year, and 2017 ahead. So why don't we leave it there and bring on Mr. Romp and Roll and tell us a little bit about who we're talking to today, Paul.
Yeah, so this was a great quote by Michael Barnett, as everybody knows now, the CEO and co-founder of Romp and Roll. Parents will always be seeking engaging, quality programs for their children, and we strive to fill that gap between learning and fun for young children. What a great quote. And with that, I welcome Michael Barnett to Franchise Today.
Gentlemen, good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of what I know has to be a busy schedule, so I really appreciate it. Of course, I appreciate Fishman Public Relations for referring you as a guest today. So the title of the show today, taken out of some of the press releases, I thought was just brilliant. I wish I could say I made it up, but I didn't, and the title of the show is Nurture the Genius, Unleash the Goofball. I love it. It's such a tremendous statement. Give me a little bit of insight behind that statement.
Well, it's sort of our clever, hopefully memorable way of bringing to life what Romp and Roll is all about, which you said in the introduction is really about the intersection of education and entertainment. So the education part of what we do at Romp and Roll is the genius, and then the fun part of what we do brings out the goofball. So Nurture the Genius, Unleash the Goofball just kind of sums it up, I think.
I would say in this case it's probably something about the apple not falling far from the tree, and that apple and tree being you and the concept. So we're going to talk a little bit about the brand and the consumer proposition. Of course, we'll talk about the franchise model and the ideal candidate profile here in a bit. But tell us about you, the individual, what you did leading up to this, and what led to the formation of Romp and Roll.
Yeah, sure. So I graduated from a little liberal arts college in Pennsylvania called Juniata College. And one of my favorite pastimes there at Juniata was running the college radio station. Between that and some part-time jobs in the summer and some internships, I felt like I wanted to get out of college and pursue a career in radio. As you can tell, I don't have the voice or the pipes to make it as a famous announcer. So I thought, well, what else could I do at a radio station? And I discovered that there were people that sold ads. So right out of college, I got into advertising sales, and this is where Stan and I sort of have crossed paths, 6 degrees of separation, as he said, through a mutual friend. But I got into a part of marketing and advertising that's also a part of Stan's background, which was called non-traditional revenue development, and really love that. And without getting into too much detail, that was all about helping radio stations generate revenue outside of traditional ad sales. And that specialty advanced my career up to the point where I was in New York City working for CBS Radio and ended up being a vice president of Chancellor Media, which was the precursor to Clear Channel Communications. After that, I decided to, with a couple partners, pull out of Clear Channel, and we started our own marketing agency. So to kind of bring it full circle and answer your question, the long way around, I guess, immediately prior to Romp and Roll, I was a partner in a consumer marketing agency, traveling all over the country and parts of the world, putting together consumer promotions for big brands like General Mills and Ford and Microsoft. But I had two little kids at home at the time and a wife that was home with them. And as I like to say, the short version of the story is one day I had a bad day at work and I said, hey, let's go start that kids gym we've been talking about. And off we went and opened one location. And 12 years later, here I am.
It's a great story. And I have to rewind the tape a little bit because the 6 degrees of separation, Michael, that you refer to, that's in the rest of the world. In our franchise world, you can put a decimal point in front of it.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't count the number of times in the space of a short conversation with just about anybody I've met in franchising, we can't find 5 to 10 other touch points or people that we know from other places or times in our life. And I just thought it was great to be able to find the Chris Beck connection between us. So
absolutely.
I'm happy that we both had the privilege of having that chapter in our lives, because it's taking so much of that into the future for me when I came into franchising that I found so many of the transferable skills that we may have sharpened in broadcast that also work for us in this environment. It's just that here you work in an environment where sustainable relationships rule the day, not arbitrons or 13-week cycles of life that are governed by other rating services. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, and not only that, but I think, you know, anybody that has started out early in their career, perhaps as a 100% commissioned salesperson, which I was, and perhaps you were at too, Stan, at one point, that teaches you how to be hungry and how to look at the world a little bit differently when you've got to, you know, think every day about what you're going to do proactively to put food on your table, and that skill isn't that different than what you do as an entrepreneur.
So why don't we walk that into what you came to, that aha moment in your life with the two kids at home, and you said, we're going to open up a gym, and you went ahead and did that. Talk a little bit about those early days and where the light bulb was that went off in your head and when that said, you know what, this might be scalable. This could be something more than just a one-off or a two-off. This could be a real national or even global model. Tell us about
that. Yeah, sure. So, you know, we didn't invent this category. I like to say I think that we've improved it. But, you know, there's some brands in the franchise space in particular that have done a good job in the space, Gymboree and Little Gym and My Gym and some others. When I was busy building my marketing agency and my wife was home with our kids, she was customers of some of those places. And when we would be sitting around the dinner table at night and talking about our days, my wife would talk about her experience having our kids at places that are now, you know, essentially our competitors, and she would say, you know, we had a good time there today, but I think if I owned a place like that, I think I would, you know, do this or this. And, you know, the conversation kept coming up, similar conversations to that over, you know, months or a year or so. And one day I looked at her and I said, you know, if we went and we built a business doing all those things that you wish that these existing businesses did, then maybe we'd have something that would stand out a little bit from the pack. And I bet you, by the way, that we're not the only parents that feel the way that you do. So, you know, that was sort of the genesis of what Romp and Roll is all about. And you know, to be specific about it, you know, what we wanted for our own children that we couldn't find existing was we wanted a place that specialized only in little kids. You know, you try to run a business that appeals equally to babies as teenagers, there's some challenges in there. There's some challenges with the kind of people you're going to hire. There's some challenges with coming up with a wide variety of age-appropriate curriculum and some other things. So we felt like there was an opportunity to have a place that's just for little kids. And Romp and Roll, you know, we stop at 5, at the age of 5. By the time you turn 5, you're too old for us. We start at 3 months, and you know, with our best customers, our goal is to keep them, you know, engaged with us for 4 or 5 years, and then they move on to other things. And then the other thing that we really wanted to see fundamentally was a wider variety of offerings. You know, there's a lot of places that specialize in gymnastics or movement programs. There's places that specialize in music programs. There's places that specialize in art. And we had the vision of, you know, why can't there be one place that could offer all of these things? So that, as, you know, a parent's interest in exposing their child to different things changes, or as a child's own interest changes, mom or dad don't have to uproot them from the place they know and love to take them someplace else. Let's have it all under one roof. So that was one of our other tenets. And then really, the third thing, what we wished existed that we've rolled into Romp and Roll, is a bright, clean, whimsical environment. You know, we think that, you know, the spark of imagination is what really drives a lot of learning with kids of this age, and we wanted a facility that represented that. So when you walk through the doors of Romp and Roll, you know, you're greeted with bright colors of lime green and teal and purple. And we've got, you know, walls at weird angles and little, you know, funny little roof lines and all kinds of things. So when you walk in, we describe it as sort of a Dr. Seuss meets Blue's Clues kind of a vibe, and you definitely know you're in someplace special. So anyway, those are some of the things that we set out. And I guess to go further to answer your question, you know, we opened our first corporate store here in Richmond, Virginia, in the fall of 2004. And as humbly as I can say, we were just sort of overwhelmed with the response that we got from the community. We at that point, we knew that we weren't the only parents who also felt the way that we did and wanted the same things that we wanted. And, you know, we literally had, you know, waiting lists and full calendars for birthday parties and such, you know, within a month or two of opening the doors. And we thought, well, let's see if we can replicate this. So we went to another part of Richmond, opened another location ourselves, and had the similar results. And then, you know, as many folks, you know, perhaps listening or who have built their franchise companies, we thought, okay, we've replicated this twice now. It's now being, you know, run by managers. We had training protocols in place. We had systems built just to run two stores. Let's see how much farther we can take it. And that's when we started franchising.
And what year was that?
That was in 2000. Well, by the time we actually got the everything done and up and running, it was about 2008.
So we're going to talk.
Great time to expand a franchise system, by the way.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about the franchising side of the business after we do our mid break. But I want to hear more about leading up to that. What are some of those differentiators? What was it that would cause parents to have an experience at Romp and Roll that said to them, "This is the ultimate big deal. This is the only place for our kids." What are some of those differentiators that are instant, other than the angles and the colors? There's got to be something else that gets the consumer just fired up about what you're doing for their children that others don't.
Well, it's, you know, on the product side, it's the curriculum. You know, we do something very unique with the kids when we have them for 45 to 60 minutes. And, you know, it's really, again, it's not preschool and it's not gymnastics. It's the combination of those two things in a lot of ways. You know, we incorporate literacy into almost all of our programs. So we have themed story time, even in our art classes. You know, that gets parents really excited. We have, again, a variety of things for them to try. And since we've opened more recently in the past couple of years, you know, we've expanded to a completely flexible membership model that operates very much like a health club, where we publish our schedule of classes and parents can come whenever they want to come, you know, for the most part, as long as the class fits the age. And I don't know if that resonates with you guys, but prior to that, and still what most of our competitors do, is you've got to commit to a particular day and a particular time to bring your child to programs like this. And today's millennial parents want a lot more flexibility than that. So, you know, just being able to offer that has been a big deal. I guess then to continue,
so,
you know, we – yeah, go ahead.
No, go right ahead, Michael.
Oh, I was just going to expand on your question as well. You know, the other thing, and this seems so this seems so basic, perhaps, but you know, we know from surveying our customers, the number one thing that parents look for when they're signing their children up for programs such as ours, it's not the number one thing is not the quality of curriculum. The number one thing is not the quality of instruction or the quality of customer service. It's cleanliness. So that is the other thing that we spend as much time on anything else. And, you know, I would hope that anyone that would walk into any Romp and Roll location would just be blown away by how clean we keep the place. And, you know, it sounds simple, but that's just, you know, that's sort of the cost of entry, in my opinion, into having a business like this. Then once you get them in the door and it looks clean and it smells clean and it is clean, then you wow them with high-quality instructors and a great environment and a unique curriculum. And that's sort of our recipe for success.
I'm looking at the website right now. I love the video that plays on the website, and you see just, you know, fun and smiles and, you know, the cleanliness and the brightness of the place, you know, just stands out. It's truly remarkable and very enticing, and I could definitely see why people would be attracted to it. So the business model is basically membership, correct?
Yeah, about 75% of our total revenue comes from membership, and we have pioneered something about 2 years ago that was very unique, and now a few more folks are starting to jump on this, starting to jump on board with this. But we have a recurring monthly membership fee, and we've got two options. One essentially gets you unlimited classes, and then one gives you a more limited number of classes per month. But that combined is about 75% of our revenue. And then about the other 20% is private birthday parties, which we do on the weekends. And then the remaining couple of percentages are some special events that we do, and a little bit of retail and some things like that.
Yeah, that's really it's really great. I love, you know, looking through the website and seeing, you know, there are different camps, and I love this parents' morning out, which obviously is very big. But looking at the video on the website, which is at rompandroll.com, for those that are interested in looking, I see parents involved. Is it the norm to have parents interactivity with this?
Yeah,
I maybe they're not parents. Maybe they're instructors.
It's mostly parents and a good number of grandparents and nannies, et cetera. But, you know, I think at the heart, we do both. We have what are called parent-inclusive classes, and we're actually switching that language to grown-up inclusive. We have grown-up inclusive classes, and then we have grown-up optional classes. If the child is 2 years or younger, a grown-up has to stay with them and participate in the class. And if the child is 2 years or older, then in most cases, the grown-up can either participate, wait in the lobby, or leave the facility during the class.
Maybe a good way to refer to it is adult kids, huh?
Well, we do want to make sure that the adults have as much fun at Romp and Roll as the kids do, and I think that they do in the classes. I know that they do at the birthday parties. We survey everybody that has a birthday party with us, and by far the comment that we get from the parents is that they had as much fun as the children did. So that's always what we go for, and a great compliment to us.
Well, the passion is evident in your voice, Michael, and we're going to come back from the half break and talk about the passion for franchising and how you've taken your brand to the next level with both international as well as domestic growth. This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, and along with Paul Segretto, we're speaking with Michael Barnett, co-founder and CEO of Romp and Roll. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. In fact, FRM is the only franchise-centric CRM that enables you to manage and store text messages as well as emails. Yes, FRM provides simple, collaborative communications between you and your prospective and existing franchisees. Make today the day you give FRM a look, and rest assured that all candidate and franchisee correspondence, including emails sent and received by anyone on your team, are permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. Plus, with their state-of-the-art candidate portals, your franchise prospects are treated to an unparalleled experience, never before available in passe virtual brochures. One last thing with FRM, your cloud-based platform is upgraded twice a year at no additional cost, so you're always operating the latest and greatest version of their solutions. Never again face long waits for expensive upgrades. Never again face long-term contracts and commitments. No excuses, just solutions, on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today, also brought to you by the Franchise Foundry. where their team of professionals has been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years with healthy, sustainable growth, the kind of growth that comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides their clients with coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach that fosters more effective solutions for their corporate teams as well as their franchisees. The Franchise Foundry is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and is skilled and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment, and development. The Franchise Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and the guidance needed to navigate those courses. Learn more about Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com for Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry. So, Michael, let's talk about growth. Let's talk about how you've done things a little bit differently in a couple of instances that I'm intrigued by, not the least of which is pushing out globally even before having a solid footprint domestically. But bigger than that, to me, is that you're on that maybe 1% of 1% short list of people who said no to the Shark Tank instead of the Shark Tank saying no to you. You've got a lot to tell us about on that side of life, don't you?
Yeah, where do you want to start on that, Shark Tank?
You start wherever you want to go first. Now, let's talk Shark Tank, because I think we know so many people who have made it to the show, but it's usually them that are kind of swiping down the candidates. It's not usually the candidates who are saying thanks, but no thanks to the tank.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing with us in Shark Tank is we got selected to be on the show before the premiere episode even aired, and my wife and I flew out to L.A. to tape it without really knowing what we were even walking into, and in fact, the premiere episode aired the night before we filmed, and we watched from our hotel room looking at each other saying, what have we gotten ourselves into here? That was very early on. I think we filmed our episode in 2009. It aired in early 2010. We were, one of the first episodes to air. And we were at a situation right there where we weren't really going in for the capital, which folks that watch the show regularly can probably tell that there's some people are there more for publicity and some are there really desperate for the money. And we really did it more for publicity, and we told them that at the time. So it gave us a little bit of a different perception, I guess, as to what kind of deal we would be willing to take. We offered them 15% of the company for, I think, a $300,000 investment. They ended up offering us 50%, and that ultimately wasn't a very hard thing to turn down, especially because, I was standing there, on the cusp of seeing our company growing and seeing the interest that we were generating and seeing the results that we were getting, and I didn't feel like giving away 50% of the company at that point was very prudent.
Well, I think in hindsight, you've gotten validation of that, and some of that came from some pretty non-traditional ways to grow the company. It's not every day that you read a profile of a U.S. franchisor that's operating fewer than 8 units in the U.S. but has almost 100 operating units in parts unknown across the pond and even further, as far away as China. So help us understand how any of that happened.
Yeah. Well, as I said in the first segment, we really got going with franchising in 2008, and early in 2008, we were off to a great start. We awarded a number of franchise agreements, and we were off and running. And then, as I believe was the case for many franchisors, and particularly those that were young and new at the time like we were, late 2008 through 2009 got to be a pretty scary time as far as inbound leads and qualified leads that could get access to the $200,000 to $300,000 it takes to start up a Romp and Roll franchise. With that said, and again, I'm not sure how common this is. I know, in my instance, once we opened a couple of franchise units, I just started getting – my phone started getting blown up in my email with international inquiries. And, for the most part, I ignored them. But in mid-2009, somebody really got my attention. It was a gentleman named Lu Yin Zhao. He's a Chinese-born American living in New Jersey at the time, getting his doctorate in management and running a web company. And his wife, Ying Ying, had just received her master's degree in early childhood education. And they contacted me and said that their life plan at that point was to partner somehow or acquire the rights to an up-and-coming kids franchise and take it back to China and grow it there. So, let me add one thing to that, which is kind of to me the most interesting part of our story in China. Now that I've been around a little bit and have talked to a number of other franchisors in China, obviously, you know, one of the challenges is communication with your partners, and that was somewhat resolved with us because they were, you know, very Americanized and understood American business culture and are American citizens. And B, you know, how do you take a concept in the United States and adapt it for the Chinese culture? Well, right out of the gate, their plan was to offer to Chinese parents an exact replica of what American parents were experiencing with Romp and Roll. So we spent zero time having to figure out how to adapt our business model or our curriculum or anything else. They wanted to, not only did they want it exactly the same, they wanted it taught by English-speaking American instructors. So our expansion in China, while interesting, really wasn't, from my perspective, was more similar to expanding in the U.S. than not, from those perspectives. Certainly, there was some interesting twists and turns in the road, but the amount of support that we provided was similar, especially for the early franchisees there, and it was simply a longer flight to get there than it would be if they were in a part of the U.S. Much longer flight.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I know you've gotten a lot of press. I see it on your website. Tell us a little bit about your experience with Shark Tank and how that ultimately affected you. And I believe it was probably from a positive standpoint.
I'm sorry, from a what standpoint?
From a positive standpoint.
Oh, positive. Oh, yeah. It was very positive. You know, I would say when the Shark Tank episode first aired, Shark Tank wasn't the phenomenon that it is now, and there was no case study or real preparation for us as to what to expect. I certainly wasn't expecting that within 24 hours of our episode airing that Friday night on ABC that we would receive 300 franchise inquiries within 24 hours. I'm not sure that we were fully prepared to capitalize on that, but what I do know is that there's an awful lot of people that, you know, watch Shark Tank that have a pretty knee-jerk reaction to filling out that in our case, filled out our form, and as a result, you know, we have not offered a franchise agreement to anybody directly because of Shark Tank. But the main benefit to us was, you know, 7 years later, it's what we're still talking about, and it's what I think Inc. magazine just wrote about, and it's what Franchise Times wanted to write about. And so I think, you know, the lesson for me and perhaps others would be, you know, not everybody can be on Shark Tank, but if you can find that one angle that makes it something interesting about you to talk to the press about, you know, it can go a long way, because when you're new and you're just getting started, a lot of times it's hard to break through to the reporters and, you know, find that angle that's really of interest. But Shark Tank did give that to us with the publicity that you referred to.
The gift that keeps on giving, Paul. The gift that keeps on giving.
It definitely is. Yeah. It definitely is. So just for our listening audience, I take it that you did not get the investment that you were looking for, correct?
We did not. No, they offered us they wanted significantly more equity than what we were offering, so we declined and moved on.
And looking back in the rearview mirror, I imagine you were happy with that. Looking back at it today,
I'm very happy with it. The episode itself, some folks may not realize that, you know, that it's most of the entrepreneurs that go in front of the sharks on the Shark Tank, they talk for 45 minutes to an hour, straight on, you know, no breaks, no redos, and that all gets edited down to the 7 or 8 minutes that you see on the TV show. So I'm very happy with the results because it could have gone a number of different ways. You know, there was definitely some parts of the conversation where I wasn't as confident in my responses or my you know, kind of how they came at me on a couple of things, and those things ended up on the cutting room floor. So as I look back and watch the episode, I'm pretty happy with what made it on the air.
I have to believe, Michael, that one of the most redeeming values of that experience this many years later is even today. I don't know if you incorporate any of that footage into your Discovery Day presentations or not, but I know I would. And I know I would certainly use that as an opportunity to help candidates who are considering my brand know that you're dealing with a franchisor who knows how to say no. You're dealing with somebody who's got the courage of his convictions. You're dealing with somebody who has got the ego strength to not just cave the first time somebody presents what they think is a good idea that you as the franchisor might not think so much. So I think there's a real intrinsic value in that, in showing the kind of strength that's required to be the leader that you must be as a franchisor. Why don't we take that as a segue into you helping us understand who it is that you'd be looking at as a candidate for your franchise? What are the qualities that are the must-brings, and what are the things that can be taught, and what kind of people are you looking to attract to the opportunity?
So the folks that are most attracted to our opportunity and that we find are making the best candidates are our target customers. Virtually everyone that we've been talking to and everyone that's in our pipeline right now is they're primarily the parent of a young child, and they're at the same point in their life and in their own community that my wife and I were 12 years ago here in Richmond. But they are, you know, they're wisely looking around and they're seeing that, you know, maybe what they want already exists in the form of Romp and Roll, and they get real excited about it. So that seems to be a real good fit. We've also got some good candidates right now that are on the either recently retired educators or wanting to retire and looking at this as sort of a second career, and we're excited about them as well. But I guess, you know, one of the things that we really look for in people is we want, as we call it, the head and the heart, to be able to be successful with a Romp and Roll franchise. We don't want folks that, you know, have nothing but an education background, because we need some folks at the franchise level that, you know, understand the business aspect of things and the ability to get out in the community and make connections and provide excellent customer service and put together some local marketing programs and things like that. But similarly, we don't just want investors or business people that don't really have an understanding or a passion for the early education side of what we do. So we say we want head and we want heart in our candidates, and we've got that in a lot of our folks, either through, you know, partnerships or past experiences or whatever, and that seems to work out great for us. Obviously, we're looking for financial qualifications and the demographic requirements that every franchise system has. We're specifically looking right now at the suburban areas of medium and large cities, focusing on the Eastern Seaboard, but really open to great people anywhere in the country. And I have to say, I forget if that was Stan or Paul that said in the opening, you know, we firmly believe that we're not a fast growth concept. You know, our goal next year is to award 10 franchises, which will be significantly more than we've done in the past years. But we've got some things in place that I think will allow us to do that. But, you know, our concept is not a fad. I don't feel like we need to be first to market with anything. We want slow, steady growth. And like I said, the most important thing to us right now, more than anything else, is attracting great people into our system that can help us grow and continue to get to the next level.
What do you do to flesh out and separate the wheat from the chaff, Michael? How do you determine when you're talking with somebody that's looking at the concept, especially when it's somebody who's already a consumer, so you know that they get it, they love the brand, but we all know from other experiences that you know, making sausage and eating sausage aren't necessarily the same. You can love something as a consumer that might not be right for you as a business operator. So how do you kind of find the metrics and the benchmarks and the milestones and the discussions that you've got with your candidates that help you quickly flesh that out and know if you're talking to somebody who should or could do this and be successful in your view?
Well, I mean, I wish I could say that I've got that 100% figured out, but I don't. What I do know is that core values are extremely important to us, and we have a set of, you know, even as a much younger, much smaller company, we invested the time to figure out what our core values are. So, you know, we can talk with our candidates at Discovery Day about that, or hopefully even before Discovery Day, and make sure that there's a good fit with what the core values are, because, you know, we want everybody in our organization, whether they're our own corporate store employees or our franchise owners or their employees, to all kind of rally around the same core values. I think the other thing that's so important in our business that's pretty easy to determine just by getting to know these candidates is, you know, at the end of the day, people are our product. And that may sound a little bit cliche, but it's really true. You know, I always say we can have the best facilities, which I think we do, and we can have the best lesson plans and the best curriculum, which I think we do. But if you're not somebody that can build a team of people that are going to make connections with the parents and the kids and really form relationships, then it's not going to be successful. So, you know, it's really a lot of that can be determined just in getting to know people and talking with them. And is it somebody that we like? Is it somebody that we, you know, want to be engaged to in a long-term relationship? And, you know, that's kind of where we start with the candidates. And then we can get into, as we get to know them better, specifically, you know, what their experience is with children, if any, what their sales and marketing and customer service experiences are. But I'd say really, you know, just the forming of the relationships and our assessment as to their ability to make connections with folks is really, really critical to us.
So as the prophet Marcus Lemonis always says, you know, it comes down to three things, you know, product, process, and people. And obviously you have a tremendous product. You've got a well-defined process from everything that I've seen and heard and researched. And, of course, people, it all starts with leadership. And I've seen in my research where you've been interviewed a couple of times at Inc. magazine. Obviously, you have some very strong leadership qualities. Tell us how you keep, you know, everybody in this growing organization, you know, motivated to, you know, keep the culture and the growth going at the same time.
You know, everybody in our organization wants one thing, and that is to see the growth and development of our young customers and their parents. And, you know, I think every time when we hit a speed bump or we get through some, we go through a challenging period or there's an issue to deal with, you know, again, I'm referring mainly to, you know, folks here at the corporate office or the management and leadership of the franchises. I find that going back and focusing on what we are here to do every day, which is to serve these young children and their parents, gets everybody focused back on what the main task at hand is and helps bring everything back into focus again.
So let's talk about your infrastructure and what kind of support and training is provided for your franchisees, and then what kind of interaction with home office on an ongoing basis can a franchisee expect when they join the team?
Yeah, great. Well, we have at the top of our leadership team is my wife and I. As you said, I serve as the CEO. My wife is the head of our franchise development program. And then we have a vice president of operations. Her name is Janine Snyder. She actually was one of our first customers and then became quickly one of our early employees at our flagship corporate center, and has grown with us over the past 12 years into now a senior role in the company. And she is in charge of the day-to-day support of our franchisees as well as their initial training. Initial training for us is 10 to 12 days at our headquarters in Richmond, Virginia. And then we spend 5 days on site at the time of the grand opening to help get everything organized and do the kind of refinement training, we call it, with the instructors and the membership desk staff immediately prior to opening. From an ongoing support perspective, Janine has scheduled calls with our franchise owners for 1 hour every other week. They, of course, can contact us anytime, and they do on a, you know, sometimes on a daily basis. We're always here, and we're at a certainly at a size and scale now where, you know, we want to have as much communication with them as they would like to have with us, and want to be involved as we can in helping them, you know, figure out whatever challenges they're going through. We also do a monthly what we call rally and roll, which is a team call between our corporate staff and each franchise owner, where we have a set agenda for the first 30 minutes on a particular topic that we think everyone needs to, you know, get some additional input or training on. And then we have what we call open mic for about a half an hour, and that allows all of anybody in the leadership of the organization at corporate or at the franchise E-level say whatever they want to say and ask anything that they want to ask. We're a pretty open, transparent organization, and feel like, you know, if somebody has something they want to compliment or gripe about, then it's fun. We're fine letting everybody hear about that.
I will say this, Paul. You know, companies the size of Romp and Roll may come to programs like the IFA's Emerging Franchisor Conference by sending the CEO or a representative. But, you know, I can tell you firsthand, when you ask about how you motivate your team to get the job done, Michael Babbs and Janine were all at the IFA Emerging Franchisor Conference, and it's a reflection, I think, of the leadership that we hear described on the call. Everybody drinks from the well. Everybody gets the opportunity to get the education, the communication, the networking, and the relationship building that comes from these events, and I think it makes for a stronger foundation in your organization, that it's not just the leader going out and coming home and telling the story. It's like everything else in life. Letting the team get out there and experience for themselves makes for a much stronger organization overall. Before we say goodbye, Michael, I'm going to ask Paul if he's got any closing thoughts, and then we're going to give you a chance to tell everybody how to find you if they want to learn more about the opportunity or just to talk with you about the program.
Great.
Yeah, I really don't have any other comments, Stan. I think you really summarized it very, very well. It always befuddles me to see organizations, you know, not participate in the events and tap into the resources that are available to them. You know, a lot of people talk about franchising being a very, very closed community, but they very rarely talk about franchising being a very giving community. And we're all in this together. And for those that are out there, you know, I highly recommend, you know, attending as many events as possible. And, yeah, you're right. Bring the team with you. Yep. Too many times I see organizations walking around at the IFA convention, and there's only one person from the team. And then I look at organizations, you know, like the Dwyer groups of the world that have multiple people there and from each of their brands. I mean, that's what it's all about. And that's what makes franchising so great, as well as just a great entrepreneurial story. And Stan, I really love the way you put it about, you know, Michael steadfast in his beliefs and turning down an offer when so many other people would have been blinded by the light, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And said, yeah, jump in, and I got these, you know, two, you know, investors and stuff. And I also think that your advice was spot on with respect to, you know, utilizing Shark Tank in discovery, because it is powerful. And it took some to get on the show, and I would also recommend, you know, ride that for all you can, and I'm sure you already have to various extents. So, Michael, I really appreciate you being on here. Stan, I know we always ask the guests, you know, so I'll go ahead and take this. You know, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. How could they learn more about this fantastic opportunity?
Well, thank you very much. Again, I want to thank you guys for having me on your show. I really, really enjoyed it, and also want to congratulate you on the success that you've described that you've had with Franchise Today in the years that you've been doing this, and for all the contributions that you make to the franchise community. But I can be reached at my email address is michael@rompandroll.com, and that's ROMP, the letter N, ROLL.com. My direct line is 804-965-9000. 6940 extension 6, and my website is www.rompandroll.com.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, Stan, another great show. I love how, you know, some of these brands are coming front and center for a franchise today and our loyal listenership. Look forward to a tremendous wrap-up to the year and some really strong things for 2017. Why don't you just give our listeners a little snapshot into what's coming up next week?
Well, we're going to have I'm not going to let it all out of the bag just yet, but we're going to have a three-legged stool of next gen, and we're going to hear from some of the best in the industry, in the world of the next generation of up-and-coming franchisors, franchisees, and suppliers. So for all that we hear about next gen at the IFA convention and the youth of America and franchising, we're going to have a representation from three points of view next week when we do a little bit of a panel discussion, but each of the three guests are going to be next geners, each of them under 30 years of age and already making their marks as suppliers, franchisee, or franchisor in the world of franchising, our wonderful world of franchising.
Well, I look forward to the show and look forward to wrapping up the year on a high note. We're still putting some finishing touches on the last shows of the year and try to end it on a very, very high note. So, again, thanks to Michael for being here today. Stan, thanks for you. I appreciate you more than you know. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.